Sorry.
It had been a whirlwind, crazy day for Elliot. He had flown into town earlier that morning for a series of critical meetings with his team. And right from the start, it had been a race to stay on schedule. His flight was delayed. His ride to the city went to the wrong terminal. And as a final irritating, anxious end to the mess, someone had pushed every floor button in the elevator. When he finally got off, it took all his strength to regain his composure and try to stay calm during the meeting. Well, that didn't last long. About a half hour in, one of the new members on his team made what he thought was a huge misstep. Elliot spent the next 2 minutes in an angry outburst, pointing out all the flaws in her plan. It almost brought her to tears. Elliot felt bad when he saw her reaction, but he told himself the outburst was no big deal. She'd get over it. Besides, the new member needed to be set straight on what was expected of her. The day finished with handshakes from everyone on the team. Now Elliot just needed to navigate through the hassles he knew would plague him on his trip back home. He flagged a taxi, got in, and took off for the airport. The driver was making good time when suddenly a car jumped out of a parking place right in front of them. Elliot saw the driver of the other car whip his head around and start swearing at them. The taxi driver just smiled and waved back and apologized. Elliot was livid. "Why are you apologizing?" he said. "It was his fault. He almost hit us." The taxi driver looked back at Elliot through the rearview mirror. "And there was a time when I would have let that driver have it," he said. "I deal with drivers like him every day, day after day. It's all a matter of how you choose to react." With that thought, he turned his eyes away from Elliot and, without another word, delivered him to the airport with plenty of time to spare. Each of us has been through days like Elliot had. These are the days when it feels like the world is against us, piling one stress on top of another. These are the days when it's tough to give a gentle response to anyone. But if we were really to examine our situation, I think few of us would argue that the Apostle Paul had it much worse. In his second letter to the Corinthians, he gives a brief rundown of just some of the trials he had endured in his ministry. He says, "Five times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was pelted with stones. Three times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger from the city, in danger in the country, in danger at seas, and in danger from false believers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face the daily pressure for all the churches." That's quite a list. And any one of these events could have brought down a torrent of worry and anxiety in his life. Any one of these could have caused him to react in a less than gentle manner toward God or his fellow believers. The same is true with you. While you may never be shipwrecked, imprisoned for your faith, beaten, or put in danger from bandits, you have your own trials to face. You may spend a semester carrying a heavy class load. You may fight the headwinds of a recession. You may spend night after night at the bedside of an afflicted child or aging parent. Or, like Elliot, your trials could just be a series of unexpected events, things that didn't go the way you expected. But no matter whether those trials are big or small, you have a choice as to how you perceive them. You also have a choice as to how you will react to them. The truth is that when these stressful times come, you'll be tempted to release angry outbursts, a rash of accusations, or fiery retaliation of hurtful words. Unchecked anxiety can unleash an Enola Gay of destruction that levels everything in its way. Just think about how many people have been wounded as a result of unbridled stress. But also think about how many disasters have been averted because one person, like the Apostle Paul, refused to buckle under the strain. It is this composure that he is summoning in the first triad of directives that he gives in Philippians 4:4-8. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything. The Greek word translated here as gentleness describes a temperament that is seasoned and mature. It envisions an attitude that is fitting to the occasion, level-headed and tempered. The gentle reaction is one of steadiness, even-handedness, and fairness. It looks humanely and reasonably at the facts of a case. Its opposite would be a sense of panic or overreaction. This gentleness, Paul says, is evident to all. Family members take note. Friends sense a difference. Co-workers benefit from it. When the storms of life are raging and the ship is breaking apart, the others on the boat may freak out, but the gentle person is sober-minded and clear-thinking. Like Paul, they look to God for the solution, and they remain contagiously calm. The contagiously calm person is the one who reminds the others that God is in control. This is the executive who tells the company, let's just all do our part, we'll be okay. This is the leader who sees the challenge, acknowledges it, and observes, now these are tough times, but we'll get through them. This is the one who stands up in the midst of chaos and says, let's take a moment to put this in perspective. God is in charge, and he will see us through. Now, where do we quarry this gem called gentleness? How can you and I keep our hand away from the trigger? How can we keep our heads when everyone else is losing theirs? We plumb the depths of the second phrase. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. The Lord is near. You're not alone. You may feel alone. You may think you're alone, but there is never a moment in which you face life without help. God is near. A friend of mine some years ago told me the story of how his 6-year-old daughter, in her hurry to dress for school, tied her shoelaces in a knot. So she plopped down at the base of the stairs in their house and focused her thoughts on the tangled mess. The school bus was coming, the minutes were ticking, the stress was mounting, but she gave no thought to the fact that her father was standing nearby, willing to help. My friend related that his daughter's hands began to shake and tears began to drop. Finally, in an expression of total frustration, she dropped her forehead to her knees and sobbed. Now that's a child-sized portrait of destructive worry, a knot fixation to the point of anger and exasperation, oblivious to the presence of the father who stands nearby. My friend took it on himself to come to his daughter's aid. But why didn't she request her father's help to start with? Well, we can ask the same question in our own lives. When the stress rises and we find ourselves in situations over our head, why don't we call out to God? Why don't we realize that God is right there with us? We have to avoid the quicksand that bears the marker, God has left you. If we indulge this lie, our knotted problem will only be amplified by a sense of our loneliness. It's one thing to face a challenge, but to face it all alone? Isolation creates a downward spiral of fret. We have to choose instead to be the person who clutches the presence of God with both hands.
All right, we're going to pause it there.